The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. Finally back in Tampa, hitting you live here. The remedy for boredom has arrived, and believe me, you're having a bad day, you want to have a few laughs, I have got the right guy. Sami Zayn is going to have you laughing your asses off today. He returns to Talk is Jericho on the eve of his huge match with Kevin Owens at Payback. But I'll tell you what, man, Sami has some great stories about meeting Axl Rose at a Guns N' Roses concert in Chicago a few years ago, about hitting up the In-N-Out drive-thru in Southern California with Enzo Amore and Big Cass, about road travel in foreign countries, and the discussions he tries to start on the bus. Where are all the graveyards? You'll find out what I'm talking about. Sammy's also talking about his WWE debut match against John Cena that ended in a shoulder injury, forced him to take months off before he even got started. You hear about his road to recovery, getting back in the ring, his feud with Kevin Owens. You also hear his Sebastian Bach impression and why he might have just saved Skid Row. He might have put Skid Row back together. And if they do get back together with Sebastian, you got to thank Sammy for it. And that is a true story, a true actual story. Get ready for Sami Zayn here on Talk is Jericho. And before we get down to it, man, what a crazy trip I've had over the last 11 days, and I am a little bit jet lagged right now. And the main reason for it is, like, yeah, we had the long tour over in Europe. Great time. The shows in London were tremendous. Newcastle was great. Paris, awesome show in Paris. Got to work with AJ Styles on live events, which we hadn't had a chance to. All of our matches have been under the microscopic crushing pressure of being on TV. We had one match on Raw, one match on SmackDown, and two pay-per-views, including WrestleMania. So this was a chance for us just to let our hair down and have some fun. So if you're in Brussels, Paris, Newcastle, or Malaga, Spain, thank you. And you got to see a great, great match that you won't see anywhere else. AJ, tremendous, tremendous guy to be in the ring with. So anyways, I left Malaga, Spain to fly to LA to do The Talking Dead, which was a killer time. Always loved doing that show. Shout out to Chris Hardwick and Lorenzo Henry, I believe his name is, and Michelle Ang. Great time with those guys. And if you haven't watched Fear of the Walking Dead, get into it. It's a great, great spinoff of Walking Dead. So anyways, I land in Paris from Malaga. I only have an hour to make my connection. That's the way it was booked. And I said, are you sure this gives me enough time? They're like, yeah, no problem with time. So the Paris airport is insane. I get off the plane. I take a bus to the terminal, then run through the terminal to get in this giant long line that's for customs, where you just basically have to show your passport and walk through. And this line is so long, and they have no intention of helping you through. It's like, my flight takes off in 30 minutes. We don't care. Everybody's flight is taking off in 30 minutes. It's very late today. And it's like waiting there and just watching these minutes tick away. And I finally get to the front, show my passport for like a second, run through to get to an elevator, which takes me down to another bus, which takes me all the way around the airport to now it's like 10:30. Like, I'm so late. My flight's supposed to take off at 10:30. No way I'm going to make Talking Dead. I'm screwed, blued, and tattooed. And I finally get off the bus at the terminal, and I'm running through the terminal, like literally sprinting. And I don't know if you guys have ever sprinted before in desperation with a bag and just this knowing that you're not going to make it. And I'm running down the terminal to basically hear that, like, hold the plane! Hold the plane! So I'm running, hold the plane! And they actually, for the first time, actually held the plane. So I get on the plane, I'm literally out of breath, drenched in sweat. I got a 12-hour flight ahead of me, like drenched in sweat, right? So it's like, ugh. So whatever, and then I'm walking down the aisleway to get to my seat, and there's like some, she must have been a model that was maybe going to Paris, like kind of a way flight girl, really pretty face with big lips, and she's sitting in my seat. I'm like, hey, do you have the window seat? Are you in 72A? She just looks at me, she goes, what? Are you in 72A? Whatever. And then she moves over to the aisle seat where she was supposed to be, and then just has this snotty look on her face for the next 12 hours. Like, they come to give her food. Like, would you like some food? What? Would you like some food?
I don't know.
Chicken or beef?
Forget it.
Just like this snotty, like model type chick, whoever the hell she was. And she wasn't even all that hot anyways. But just, so I land in LA 12 hours later. And then I got to stand in customs again, super long line. I get through and I'm waiting for my bags in customs. And they've got like, there's like probably, I don't know, 300 bags on this poor carousel. They're buried four deep, going around in circles, round of circles. And I'm there's this lady that's talking to me and she's like, do you have a bag? I'm like, yeah, I can't find anywhere. She goes, well, only one bag is missing, so you'll be okay. I wait for another 5-10 minutes. She goes, what's your name? I said, my name's Irvin. She goes, oh, yours is the bag that's missing. Okay, gee, thanks. So then I'm like, now what am I going to do? I've got no clothes. I've got nothing. I need to take a shower. I got this nationwide TV show that's super popular. I want to look good. And I got nothing to wear. And I don't even have shampoo. I don't have a comb. Nothing. So I go outside and the studio had sent a driver to pick me up. And I'm like, all right, sir, we're on a mission. Take me straight to Melrose, to John Varvatos. Shout out to Wise Cousin Chad. So they go to Melrose, go to Varvatos, buy a wicked outfit with a $1,500 pair of boots. If you saw Raw, you know what I'm talking about. That's an exaggeration, by the way. And they take me to the drugstore. I buy, all the things I need to buy, straightening iron, hairspray, toothbrush. I go to the hotel, take a shower, head over to the Talking Dead, and just kill it on Talking Dead. It was a lot of fun, always a blast. Then go straight back to the airport, get on the plane to take a red eye to Hartford for Raw yesterday. So it was insane, man. Like just a crazy travel day. It was worth it to do Talking Dead, but man, I finally got my bag back today. I'm back home at Tampa now. And I'm back in the ring for another swing, as my friends in AC/DC will say. So anyways, that's the type of traveling that I do to bring the raucity to all of you. So I hope you enjoyed Raw last night. I hope you enjoyed Talking Dead. I hope you enjoyed the European tour. And I hope you enjoyed these podcasts, because I know you are going to love Sami Zayn today. All right,
you're listening to Talk is Jericho.
All right, so we are here in Newcastle in the middle of a amazing European tour with Sami Zayn, the recently returned Sami Zayn. And you've been on these tours before, because we first met on one of these tours.
Yeah, and actually this is my second time on the podcast.
Yeah.
So thanks for having me back. Last time, and it's funny, we're in Newcastle, which is Neville's hometown.
Right.
So I do feel a little, I don't know,
a little bummed chuffed out. Yeah.
That he's not here. Is that a word? Chuffed?
Chuffed, yeah. I think you're kind of bummed
out. Did I use it right? Or
maybe. Chafed.
I think that's an itchy thing.
You get some chafing as well because you feel so bad.
Well, I miss him. All that to say. When I'm in his town, he's not here, I miss him.
How is that for you? Like, I know you guys are all so close, because not only did you work at NXT for so long, but also around the world. And obviously he got hurt.
Yeah.
He's out for 3-4 months, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that feel? I mean, as a peer and as a dude.
Well, as a friend, really, it sucks, because I think the timing, and it was in the match with you, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was probably just as shocking to you. But, we talked about it the other day, but it was on something so elementary for him, a baseball slide in that match with you. And I was telling you this, but he's had, I think, an 11 or 12 year career now, and he's never actually been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that got to him mentally a little bit, but worse than anything, it was right before WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And he was kind of in the mix with Dolph and myself and Kevin. And I think he would have been in that ladder match. How was it looking?
He was sketched in there.
Yeah. I know that. So it's such a shame that he missed out. But anyways, I think he's got plenty of WrestleManias ahead of him. So
it's funny, because I remember the week before he was working with Kevin and did some kind of a twisting dive over the top where Kevin moved and he landed on his feet.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
Yeah.
He was practicing that and just like pulled it off no problem. And then something stupid like the baseball slide.
And we were talking about
killer.
This, about how many guys have been messed up from that baseball slide.
Him, Christian.
Yeah.
Joe Henning told us he was. Liger tore his Achilles, all the stuff Liger did.
Ugh. Yeah, right.
Van Damme. A bunch of different dudes.
He's another guy who never really got hurt much.
No, until he did a baseball slide.
Yeah.
So people at home just starting the business, no more baseball slides.
Yeah, stay away from that one.
No more baseball.
The risk reward is
But
not...
it's funny, the other day we had a match, and we were going to use that kind of as a finish, where I was going to do a baseball slide, and then we were going to do the big injury angle. And I was just thinking in my head, like, yeah, it's so ironic. I'll do the baseball slide and get quote-unquote hurt.
Yeah.
You'll fall for it, and I'll pin you. But I'm in the back of my head, I'm like, what if I really do
yeah.
break my leg?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even know. Yeah, I'd be like, no, don't touch me. Like, oh, this guy's selling great.
Yeah, all part
Get
of the
away
act.
From me. This is real. This is real. You know,
he's doing great. Very convincing.
But that was going to be his first WrestleMania. But conversely, this was your first WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah. And going back to your question, actually, how it is a little bit mind-boggling that, especially if Neville would have been in that match, but for all the stuff that Kevin and I are currently going through, it's still pretty remarkable to me that we shared that first WrestleMania match together.
Right.
Yeah, because like we really, really, really started.
Yeah, like you got no love lost.
As low as it gets. Yeah.
No love lost between you, but you really started together.
Yeah, yeah.
Same time, right?
And so for as much as I dislike him and he dislikes me, I think in the back of our heads, like there is a certain element of appreciation for that. The fact that, well, this is the same guy I started with and now here we are at the biggest show of all time.
It's the Batman and the Joker.
Yeah, it never ends.
You'll be linked forever.
Forever, it never ends.
How was it for you? I mean, because a lot of people, if you're going through the WrestleMania, once again, the biggest WrestleMania of all time as a real shoot figure, and people say three best matches. They liked AJ Jericho. They liked the women's match, and they loved the ladder match. A lot of people said, I think even the Observer voted the ladder match as the best match on the show.
Oh, wow. All
which...
right.
You know, that's always the goal, is to have that one show stealer best match. Yeah. This year there was a couple, but you guys were one of them.
Yeah, it's cool anytime you're discussed in that sort of company, especially on the, and we discussed this, the biggest show of all time.
Yeah.
There may have been a bigger show in, what it was in North Korea.
Korea, yeah.
But it may have been mandatory.
go to jail.
You are required to attend. But anyways, that one, there's a lot of fuzziness with regard to that show. But just the biggest show, and to be put in that kind of situation to open the show. And, I thought it was a pretty good match. And there was a little sub-story going on with me and Kevin. I think that was the, one story in the match that made it a little exciting for fans. And honestly, I really didn't know what to expect as far as crowd reaction.
Why is that?
You know, I don't know. Because you know that the diehards are at WrestleMania. It's funny. I think it used to be backwards. Like, I think WrestleMania, if you compare it to the Super Bowl, you would think WrestleMania for the Super Bowl, casuals watch the big one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch football, but I'll watch a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you think it's the same thing for wrestling where, the casuals will watch, WrestleMania, the big show of the year. But it's not. WrestleMania actually gets our most hardcore fans paying big money and making it their annual vacation.
Just all at once.
Yeah. It's the diehards who are there. So I kind of knew that, but I also know that I'm very new to the WWE part of it. I had several years in NXT, but now on Raw and SmackDown, I've only been up there for a month. So the ovation when my music hit, first my music hit and I heard nothing. And then I started walking out and then it got really loud.
The delay.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. And they were singing the song and everything. I was really shocked, but it was a bit of an, I don't know. This is something that's happened to me a couple times recently. For my music, it was really cool and I was hyped up and all right, whatever. And then I got in the ring and I looked around. I was trying to take it in and just, this moment in front of 100,000 people. And then, it's kind of cool. It's kind of big. But it is still a show. I'm still in a wrestling ring. It's still the same. I'm not. And then Kevin's music hit. And the ovation or reaction that he got, that got to me. And for some reason, I'm getting goosebumps even now talking about it. My whole body just got like an electrical charge. And this is something I've started doing recently, which is not a good thing. I started screaming curse words at the top of my lungs.
Why?
I don't know, because I got so hyped up. I got so charged. I was like, yeah, mother effer, come on. I don't know why. Just something took over me. It's happened a couple times recently, but that's when I knew, okay, now it's time to go, and the fans are into it, and this is exciting. It was a really great experience, honestly. I mean, I don't know how many WrestleManias you've done at this point, but I'm sure you remember your first,
Always. Remember, maybe I've done 12.
Wow.
You always remember your first, but the thing is for us, at that time, it was just arenas. Now it's all stadiums.
Yep.
And I always find with a stadium crowd that it's, instead of seeing, okay, there's a person here, there's a person there, it's more of like this living, breathing, moving, giant entity.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't see an individual face. You just see this thing.
And sound comes in waves.
Right.
It's very interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Had you had a match like that before, like a multiple man ladder match?
I'm sure I have.
Mm-hmm.
not on that, you know, level.
The stage,
not with seven people either. Seven's such an odd number.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, give me four, give me six.
Give me eight.
Yeah, seven. what are these odd numbers? But three, five, seven. Those are numbers I don't want to work with.
But you did.
2, 4, 6, any day.
It's like the Star Trek movies. 2, 4, 6 are good. Yeah. 1, 3, and 5 suck. Let's stay away from those ones. Yeah. But I mean, putting together those matches, I always find like you start out together. What do we do? And then each guy puts in a thing and thing, boom, boom, boom. And then you have this big, long chain of events.
Yeah.
And you're not involved in all of it, but all you have to remember is like, okay, when he falls off the ladder through the table, yeah, I got to come back in. And once you get that put down, it's actually a really fun match. Yeah. You just have to be on the ball.
Because you have time to appreciate what's happening.
Yes.
Whereas usually, you know, you're just doing.
Yeah,
doing
stuff. Exactly.
And it's about doing it well. But this is sometimes, I remember in that match, I kind of got bumped out and I had a little bit of time on the outside and I was sort of recovering from whatever it was I took and I was just watching the screen.
Yeah.
The people, and I was like, my God, this is this is cool. Like, I get to actually observe this for a second. It's different, but it's fun.
We had the first Money in the Bank ladder match in L.A., and Shelton Benjamin ran up one ladder and clotheslined me off the top of another ladder, and I bumped onto the ground and onto the floor and into the dasher boards, hit it hard, and I look up, and I see Adam Sandler staring down at me. He's like, get up, man. I'm like, what a way to make a living, hey, man.
That's a decent impression,
get
actually.
Get up. Get up. But you had this basically triumph and return at WrestleMania. Huge, huge show. First match, great match. But it was kind of the tale of two cities because it was 6 months before that you make your big Raw debut, yeah, in your hometown. And from what I understand, we've never talked about this, so you have to explain it. Within 20 seconds, you blew your shoulder out or something.
Yeah, so
like
two things happened.
Because last time we spoke, you were still in NXT waiting, yep, for your chance to get
right,
the big
that's
call.
Right, that's right. So to this day, I'll tell you this right off the bat. I still don't know to this day if that was meant to be a debut.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never know because of the way it all
How
went
do you
down.
Mean?
Well, I knew I was doing the match, but I didn't know if that was the plan for me to stick around.
Oh.
Yeah. I had heard that it might have been a one-off. Okay. Yeah, but then there was also, I mean, nobody, you know how quick things change around here and how uncertain things are. So at the time, I was talking to Hunter, and I was trying to feel him out, which if you ever do talk to Hunter about this, I mean, it's been 3 years of me trying to feel him out. Like, and I'm really bad at poker. I have no poker face. I'm bad at fishing for information. And,
and he's
so Hunter, yeah, what are you thinking? Is this looking like maybe something, you know? Or we,
yeah, maybe.
Look, man, he just cuts me off right away. I don't know, you know? But so he didn't know, but he's like, look, just do your best. And I'm sure, obviously, if it's good, and I know it will be, maybe, you know, even if that's not the plan, you could force their hand a little bit. But within, on my entrance, I was particularly excited. And when I threw up my arms in the air on the steps, as I do in my entrance, something kind of popped. But it wasn't, it was just a little shock. I kind of, ooh. What the hell?
A little stinger
that?
Or something.
I don't know what it was. I just, something popped. And
let me just rephrase. And this is in Montreal.
Montreal.
Against John Cena.
And Bret Hart, my idol, introducing me to the ring.
Wow.
Monster ovation.
U.S. Championship match.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, it was like the stars were aligned. It was this perfect Cinderella story. And the ovation I've been pretty lucky. I've gotten a couple of, you know, decent reactions in my lifetime from some good fans, very vocal fans. But the reaction that night was very unique because it was guttural. You know, it was from people's, like,
yeah,
it was from here.
Yeah.
It was real. It was really real. It wasn't just, you know, somebody's music hits and we love this guy. Yay. Yeah. It was, it can't be.
Something extra.
It was real. It was real. It was so special.
How did so many people know you from...
Honestly, I'm a bit surprised. I don't know. But I guess, you know, Montreal... I mean, who's come out of Montreal in the last 20 years? There was Rougeau 20, 25, whatever years ago. There was Sylvain Grenier. And, I mean, he was...
But no one
really
like, big stars.
Yeah. And then, you know, so I think if you're from Montreal and you hear there's a guy in the WWE system, you would probably know about it if you're from Montreal.
And the thing I find too with NXT, let's say there's 10% of the crowd that knows NXT and knows you,
yeah,
but they're a very vocal 10%. Yeah. Plus, you're from Montreal. If the guy beside you is cheering and going nuts,
yeah.
Well, geez, I got a cheering going nuts too. I never heard this guy, but hey, he knows him.
We're partying? Are you partying? Let's do this. Well, you know, it's funny because I say that from even back on my time on the Independence. I would always say it's like it's a domino effect. So just as an example, but if I was being brought in, let's say, to do a show in Italy and it was in front of 300 people, those 300 people didn't all come to see me. Maybe 40 of them did.
Right.
40 of them might know who I am, or 60 of them. But there's still 200, you know, the majority don't. Yeah. But then those 60 are so excited to see me in Italy. Like, my God, you're coming to our country, that they're going to, you know, start the Olays and start everything else. And then it you kind of work to them, and it kind of domino effect. It spreads out to the whole crowd, you know?
It's contagious.
So with NXT, it was very much, especially before getting the call up and for about 2 years, I started doing loops up with the main roster here, and before I actually got called up. And it was the same thing. It'd be a vocal minority in the crowd, and through them and through my work, I would be able to slowly, by the end of the match, if I did my job right, you know, get the whole crowd with me. Mm-hmm. So, but to me, that's almost at this point, and I've discussed this with other people, at this point in my career, now with television exposure weekly with Raw, it's almost like that art form, it doesn't apply to me anymore. The art of going in somewhat unknown and winning a crowd over,
yeah,
like those days are going to be behind me soon enough,
right.
Because this crowd is getting to know me now, and once they know you, that's it, they know you, they mm-hmm. feel how they mm-hmm. feel about you, and that could always change, but they know you. But that there's something very special about going in cold and winning an audience. To me, there was a real pride in that when I was on the Independence.
I find that.
You know?
Yeah. I find that even with rock and roll, you play a big festival.
Yeah.
And you'll always have your fans there that know you, and the other fans that have never heard of you before. And you can tell because the arms are crossed or the sourpuss face.
Yeah.
And that's the guy you want to win over, the girl. And when you can do that, that's where you say, that was a great show.
And that's, to me, the true barometer of your work.
Yes.
They don't owe you anything.
Right. And they don't care.
Your fans owe you something. Like, even if you're having a stinker, they're like, oh, God. And they'll kind of clap just because you're, you know, they're emotionally invested in you. They want to cheer you on. Hey, better luck next time. You know, whatever. The guy with his arms folded and the sourpuss look on his face. People's first instinct is to want to just crap all over.
Yeah,
you.
Get rid of this guy.
Yeah,
who is this guy?
Who are you? Go away.
But
if you suddenly turn that guy, I mean that's
the secret.
The art form,
right? Yeah, that's the secret.
That's the secret.
Is that kind of how, like, you talk about the football chant? Is because there's a couple different ones that I've heard since we've worked of the people chanting.
Yeah.
But the one that they do chant, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the Olé, Olé, Olé. I mean, that's a Brazilian, Mexican, that's a soccer chant.
Yeah, it's big in Montreal, so that's how it all started for me.
Oh, okay.
It's big in, you know, Montreal is a very worldly city, so in one of my first matches in Montreal, you know, I the Olé thing just caught on, and that was
it. It's great.
Yeah,
because it's cool. A great chant.
Yeah, it is. It's very, you know? It's fun.
And people say it for, I mean, I hear it at rock shows all the time, like for Iron Maiden. Maiden, Olé,
that's cool.
Olé. Like, so it's kind of a universal thing that everyone knows.
Yeah.
It never been used in our world of wrestling.
The funny thing is, so it was unintentional for the most part, but at least before I got to WWE, I basked in it, sort of. I played up to it.
Yeah.
But here, you know, because there was a previous sort of life before here and a previous persona and everything else, once I got here, that didn't actually, the chant followed me, but I never actually said Olé.
You've never said it on TV?
It's not my thing. It's from my past life, and it's followed me here, which is why at this point, it's so remarkable that it still follows me a little bit, because I think now if I go to Raw in Baltimore or something and we got 10-year-old kids in the crowd chanting Olé, they have no idea what they just know, like, oh, that's what we do,
it's
for Sami Zayn.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they don't know, like,
the history
of it, but it's...
But does it matter? Like, even last night when we worked on SmackDown, we were in England, in London.
Yeah.
And we started the tag match, and we had, you know, typical thing. You have, like, 90 seconds before the break. But they were really getting into the Olé chant, so I was just like, I'm just going to stand here.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's 90 seconds of Olé. That'll get you over more than three arm drags, drop kick.
You know, you're so right about that.
You know? And that's what I'm just going to stand here, and they'll catch it all on tape, and then more people will hear it, and this will start going everywhere.
TV is such a funny thing. Because we have such limited time, and I'm adjusting to it. Because especially live TV.
Mm-hmm.
NXT TV tapings are the same thing as SmackDown. You know, you have your time, and you have time constraints, whatever. But Raw, it's, time is precious. And as you were telling me, it goes fast.
Yes.
Which it does. It really does. But sometimes, you know, you just get so it's trying to realize and find out where you're getting the most out of that time. Mm-hmm. And honestly, even though it's a go, 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 go world, you need to almost learn when it's time to just do nothing, because sometimes doing the nothing is actually doing way more for you than anything you can do in the ring.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I learned that from Pat Patterson. He said, you never want to step on your own pop.
Right.
We work so hard to get the pop, and when you get it, don't step on it.
Yeah.
So yesterday, for the example, when they're starting to chant lay, 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 we don't have to do a damn thing.
Just stand there.
Just stand there. And if that means we need action, no.
Yeah.
Commentators can talk about this chant.
Do you really need anything?
Yeah.
You know, what is this word of need?
Yes, yeah. We need action to get this reaction.
The whole reason we do
is to get that.
But we've already got it. Yeah.
Let's just stand here, man. And that's part of those little tricks that you learn over the years where it's like, wow, we don't have to do anything to get this. And
the moves are a means to get those reactions. That.
Yeah. You want them to chant and sing and anything. Yeah. If you can do that, you're doing great.
Right.
So let's go back. So you see, so you're in your hometown.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So all the stars are aligned. You feel the electric shock.
I feel a little pop in my shoulder. I go, what was that? But then I'm starting to move my shoulder on the stairs. And I go, okay, everything seems to be fine. I don't know what that was, but I didn't enjoy it. And then the match begins, and no more than a minute or 2 minutes into the match, Cena gives me a back suplex, and my shoulder just goes out, completely out, popped out of the socket.
Oh, you feel it go?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. And I've never dislocated my shoulder, but I knew. And so I tell the ref, I was like, my shoulder's out, and I kick out, and I'm trying to just get to the apron, but I can't turn over. It was one of the weirdest feelings. My arm was just dead, and I'm trying to roll over, but it wouldn't go. And then I think when I rolled over, it popped back in.
Wow.
And so the doctor comes and checks on me. I go, Doc, can you pop it back in? He goes, well, is it out? Is it in? I go, what the hell do I know? You're the doctor. I don't know. Right. He goes, well, can you move it? And he's helping me move it. I go, yeah, a little. He goes, well, it's in.
Mm.
What do you feel? Can you keep going? I go, yeah, just stand by.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, man, live television, imagine it ended there.
Your first match.
Imagine it ended there.
Oh.
I had no choice. It was not even a question.
You're right. You're right, man.
And it managed to kind of hold on. It was painful, but it held on. Like, it didn't pop out again then. But I was able to get through the match. And, you know, I've heard so many people with shoulder problems in the wrestling industry, in any athletics, even, you know, civilian, just normal human people.
Human people. People from another planet. the galaxies.
Everybody's got shoulder problems. And you hear that so much. Oh, my shoulder popped out. I'm going to pop back in. So I thought, okay, now that happened to me. And then I get the MRI the next day, and they go, you need surgery. And I was floored. I said, what? But it's back in. Everything's fine. Look at this.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And then they were really big on me getting surgery. And Hunter's like, get the surgery. And I'm trying to go every other route but surgery. And then I was wrestling Kevin in my last match. It was for the NXT championship in NXT. And I go to just throw him in the stairs. And my shoulder popped out and popped right back in really quickly.
Oof.
And in that moment, I said, maybe I need the surgery.
Yeah.
And that was it.
What was it?
It was a torn labrum, torn rotator cuff.
Wow, the whole...
Yeah, the worst part of it is actually now, almost a year later, they shaved down the AC joint.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming like anything across... You people can't see this.
Yeah.
But if I try to put my shoulder, my left arm to my right shoulder.
Yeah, if you try and hug yourself.
If I try to hug myself, it's really painful still.
Wow.
But whatever. I think another thing I didn't know about surgeries is I guess it takes like a year and a year and a half till you fully feel like yourself again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're getting there, but you know, what are you gonna
do? It's tough. I know Orton had a lot of problems with that over the years.
Yeah,
one time. I remember he was with Edge and he went down just to hulk up for the RKO and he hit the ground and...
Yeah.
Match was done.
I saw the footage.
Remember
of
that? Yeah.
Not pleasant.
Same story, though.
It's funny because when I got hurt and they took me in the back in the trainer's room, I guess Randy's warming up for his match.
Little bow thing.
The body blade.
Body blade, yeah.
And he goes, oh, yeah, probably a torn labrum. And you know, he's like, he's giving me the diagnosis.
You're like, shut up, man.
You had a subluxation. Don't worry about it. You should be fine. Like, he was giving me, he was the shoulder expert, you know. And, you know, the doctor's working on me, but he's kind of glancing at Randy like, Randy, please don't. Psych this guy out, you know?
But let's talk about how you're saying you had a torn labrum and a torn rotator cuff, but yet you still did this 20-minute match. From what I remember, was pretty damn good.
Yeah, it was all right.
How do we do this? You know,
I don't know. I really, it's so unnatural.
Yeah.
You know, it's so unnatural, and I think about it all the time, but wrestling, so, you know, because as you get older, you kind of try to conserve your bumps, but I've realized it's not the bumps that kill you. The bumps are not good for you, but it's not the bump. It's wrestling, man. It's just wrestling. Getting in the ring, walking, running, adrenaline, throwing the guy off, running, stopping, dropping down, leaping up, picking a guy up, getting slammed. It's all that. And then immediately getting into a car for 4 hours and being in this, you know, fetal position and then crunched up and then getting 6 hours sleep or four hours
night, a bus for an hour and a half, a flight for 3 hours, basically.
And that was a good day.
Yeah. Landing, we go eat, go to bed, wake up.
Yeah. You know, it's all that that kills you. I don't think it's the bump. Certainly that it'll help, but none of it is natural. It's really of a one of a kind of industry. And I don't have anything I can compare it to.
I think I was
trying on the bus the other day, and I think the closest thing is maybe the circus.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not really, like, they have an off season, right? Or do they go year round?
They might go year round, but I mean, I think that's very close, because if you're talking about, let's say, a football team, no, they play half the year.
Yep.
They get on the bus, the plane, their gear is dirty, someone washes it.
Yeah.
They check into the hotel. You know, fine, acting, don't even talk about the way actors are treated. You have to go, you know, freaking hit your thumb with a hammer and they get the stunt guy in there. So this is unlike any other. I would say it's a live stunt show Shakespearean play.
Yeah, but it's interactive.
Interactive.
Which unlike anything else.
Yeah.
Right in there. Because anything else you watch, if you're watching a movie, let's say you're even watching theater, I'm sure I've heard somebody else say this, but if you scream at the actor, you get thrown out.
In wrestling,
if you scream at the actor, it might actually change the
the performance of the play.
Right, it changes. So it's just so unique, and I guess that's why I'm in love with it and always have been.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, continue with Sami Zayn. How was it for you when you got hurt? Were you pretty depressed?
I've gotten better at it. I was depressed. Who am I kidding? I was horrible.
Because you're thinking, like, I know how it is, because I remember when I was first starting. I remember one time I was trying to get an ECW for a year, and Paul Heyman had Benoit call me in Calgary on a Saturday morning at noon and said, can you be in Philly tonight? And there was no Hotwire back then or Expedia. And, you know, like, try and call the airline. And the only way I can get there is I get into Philly at 12 midnight. And you just can't make it. Yeah. And I just thought, I missed my chance. I'm done. I'll never get my shot again. Obviously not the same thing. But after all this time, you finally get up there. And then the next day you're hurt.
And what made it worse, and this is going to make me sound a little petty, but it's the truth, is right after Kevin got called up.
Of course.
And not only that, Kevin got called up, but then I also heard some rumors about a couple of other guys getting called up, and it really kind of broke my spirits a little bit. And then when I heard one particular person was about to get called up, I remember just losing it, like really, like screaming with almost like tears in my throat, sort of just like, what the, you know, cursing. And
it was my chance.
Just it was a little petty, but it's just it's a natural feeling.
We've all gone through it.
It's a natural feeling.
I remember when guys would get called up to WCW or WWE, and I was still in the minor leagues going, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why can't I get in? That's, I'm way better than that guy.
Yeah, you know? And like I put in the word. It's I'm a little ashamed to admit it now, but it is just, it's very natural. And consciously, I'm happy for all these people.
Of course.
And ultimately, their success will not hinder my success. I'm a firm believer in that.
No one's going to take your spot.
There is
that anymore.
There is no your spot. There's just spots. There's just you. You know,
right.
I believe that anyways, if you're any good too, especially like you're not just easily replaceable. There's another one of you somewhere.
Yes.
You know, and I thought about this with Del Rio actually, because when Del Rio got, I don't know if he got fired or he left
quit or whatever,
whatever it was. I know they were looking for someone to fill that spot. And then I thought, well, how many 6'3", good-looking, Mexican guys who speak English who can also wrestle a main event WWE style are out there?
Right.
Literally zero.
Yeah.
I could not think of one.
I remember one time Canyon Seam was like, yeah, we're looking for another Del Rio. I'm like, you had a Del Rio. There is no other one.
Yeah.
He's right there.
It's harder to find.
You're looking for another Del Rio? That's him right over there.
I can tell you with absolute certainty that you will not find another redheaded Arab-Canadian with world wrestling experience. I guarantee you won't find another one.
That's
there's only
there
one.
Isn't one.
Yeah, yeah, there's literally only one, yeah. Which I guess kind of makes you feel special a little bit, in a way.
Wearing a fancy hat. Or
yeah, you know? Go. You might be able to buy the hat, but good luck with the rest of the stuff. Oh, by the way, I didn't know whether I should do this or not. Today I went to we're in Newcastle. I took a little walk, and last time I did the podcast, you were kind of like joshing me or ribbing me or whatever about.
Well, TJ had just stolen your hat.
About my style.
Yeah. Well, that was more Neville said you have an old man style.
No word of a lie. I walked down to the market today and I saw a guy had to be 70 to 80 wearing my exact ring jacket and hat, like the Harrington jacket and the flat cap. And I actually did like the creepiest thing, which I hate because I was just going off on a rant the other day about how I hate camera phones and it's so invasive and people just go up and we walk through the airport and they just hold up a phone.
Yeah, don't even ask.
They're just holding phones in your face like you're some sort of zoo animal. And but I did it. I was like, I have to chronicle this. So I couldn't just, you know, hold the phone and take a picture. I pretended to be on a call and went like, click. So I have a picture of this guy and I've been thinking about tweeting it, but I don't know. I feel very creepy-ish about it, and I feel a bit hypocritical after just going off on this huge rant on the bus the other day about how it's so invasive. And, you know, I remember being on a dance floor at, like, a club. This had to be years ago because, God, the idea of a club now just is torture.
A nightclub?
Yeah. Want to go to the disco? And I remember kind of being in a zone, you know, in a dancing zone, like really feeling it. And I was really dancing up a storm. And this girl was tickled by it. And so she just pulled out a phone and started recording me. And I just stopped and go, what the hell do you think you're doing? What is this? You think this is acceptable behavior? What are you doing? Get that thing out of my face. Like, I understand why Axel jumped in the crowd all those years ago.
Yeah.
Get that guy's camera out of my face. No one's going to do it. I got this. And he just dove it. I get it. And I feel like it's going to be me eventually. I'm telling you, one day it's just going
to. But that's how you are, though. Not that I've got to know you, working with you, but you're very meticulous. You go over things over and over again. And certain things that I would never think about kind of hang you up. Bother you in certain ways.
In some ways, yes. You know? Here's another thing I've recently discovered about myself. It's funny you say this because of working together, but so maybe I'm a little more neurotic than I realized. Sometimes you got to take a step back because I have this perception or conception of myself, but then all these other people I work with seem to see me a totally different way. So it's this thing I used to say about Kevin, like he thinks I'm the weirdest person alive. Mm-hmm. He has this story. One day, if you have him on this podcast, I'm sure he'll tell you this story about it's the defining story of why I'm the weirdest person alive. Something about a bathroom and on the road. He'll tell it another day. But I don't think I'm that weird. I don't. But then I realize now when I'm working with these other people that they don't see things the way I see them and that I'm a little meticulous or I have a weird way of looking at things. For example, when we were talking about the ladder match, you know, I view things as like almost like a movie, and this is the first act, and you introduce the characters, and the second act is the conflict, and the third act, you know, the twists and turns and the resolution. So I started talking in terms of chapters. I said, okay, guys, chapter one, this is what we do, and then chapter two, and then it became like a rib with all the other guys. Like, wait, I'm sorry, which chapter are we in right now? You know, and I have this like grandiose artistic view of the match and these little details, but I don't know. Worked well for me anyways, but I realize not everyone works that way.
You come from a good place, but even though we were laughing, we still laugh about when we had our first match and you were explaining to me all the stuff I was going to do, and I was like, dude, this ain't the rec hall in Chicoutimi, Quebec.
Chicoutimi,
I got a couple matches on my belt. I got this. And then we're going to go lock up, and you go, kick me in the stomach. Yeah. And I'm like, do you think so? Really?
That really made me laugh. Kick me. And now every time we work, right, I go to that. Kick me.
Because you realize it's like, I think this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
right?
But here's the thing I realized also when I transitioned to WWE. It happened on the indies, I had to be more meticulous.
Right.
Because sometimes you're working guys that don't know what they're doing.
Well, sure, you're in control of everything. You have to be in a lot of ways.
But in WWE, even here, details that you take for granted sometimes they people, if they haven't worked you, because so with WWE, I noticed that these guys, they work each other all the time. WWE, so
right.
You're working the WWE roster. But I'm pretty new to these guys, so I have to be pretty like explicit about certain details to how to do certain things that I like to do, which I know probably rubs people the wrong way, because it's just like you said, hey, you don't got to tell me. I know. I have to say it, you know?
I think it's one of those things. It's like, bear with me. It's like Lance Storm. When Lance first came in the business, he's very quiet. He's very straightforward. He's very direct. And a lot of people took that as arrogance at first.
Sure.
Because you didn't know his personality.
Right.
Then when you get to know his personality, he's not arrogant. That's just how he is.
Yep.
You're the same. You're not...
I'm just the inverted Lance Storm.
Yeah. You're not like a know-it-all or telling people to do. You just think out loud a lot about what you want to do.
I do.
And you're telling guys how to do it without telling them. But if you didn't know that, people would be like, who the hell is this guy telling me what to do?
Yeah.
You know, but everyone knows you here. That's the thing as well.
Well, they're getting to know me. They are.
I looked around yesterday and half the main roster are all NXT, quote unquote.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's really crazy to see how it's the turnover now.
Yeah.
And I was trying to calculate the guys from like the previous era, and I think it's you and sort of the Dudleys are back now. So Mark Henry, Big Show, Kane, Goldust Truth, R-Truth, I guess, kind of.
Hunter's around, Taker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a handful. That's it. Besides that, it's all guys that I was in developmental with 3 years ago.
Or you get the Orton, Cena level guys.
Of course.
Ziggler and those type
Maybe
of guys.
More than I realized. Yeah, Miz, Ziggler.
Yeah.
A lot of them have been around. But there's just a lot of new guys.
Yeah.
And all this to say there's a lot of
together,
new guys.
Right?
And I have that personality, you're right. And I'm finding out a lot about myself, honestly. I feel like I've grown or changed more as a human being, as just a person, from age 28 to 31 than I did from age 16 to 24. And that's saying a lot, you know, because those are really formative years.
Right.
But I really feel like being in the WWE, it's such a life lesson on just so many levels. And there's so many personalities. And, you know, did you ever meet Howard Fine?
Yeah,
the acting coach, right? So I did a seminar with him. They brought him into the Performance Center in Orlando, which was an amazing experience for me personally. Everyone has their own interpretation of this, but it was an acting class. And for me, I think it did wonders for me as a performer in the ring and as a promo or whatever. But I remember him saying one line that really stuck with me. He said, "We're all the heroes of our own story." You know, and it's so true. Like, because he said, we judge ourselves by our intentions. We judge others by their actions.
Right.
You know, so you just see some guy doing something. You don't know why he's doing it. You just think, well, what a jerk.
Yeah.
But in his head, he's thinking he's doing the right thing. You know, like
it
almost goes back to, you know, the old saying about a heel is always justified in his own head.
Right.
It's that same thing. Everybody's the hero of their own story. I'm not the bad guy here. I'm just trying to do this.
Yeah, don't do anything wrong, right?
Yeah, so I've been walking through life and the wrestling industry and the WWE thinking, hey, man, I'm just eager to work and let's make some art and put on good matches. And all the while, I've rubbed a couple of people the wrong way here and there.
But I had the same.
I don't think it's malicious. And I think that's the one thing. I don't think people think I'm malicious.
Right. No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I had that when I came in here, too, because my role when I came in here was to be on the show, an arrogant guy who literally thought that everyone else was boring and that I was the greatest. Right. I was the Millennium Man. I was going to save the WWE. I was Y2J. But by saying that stuff on screen, the guys in the back were like, who the hell is this?
Isn't that the
loser think
thing?
He is? Yes.
It's because that's an act.
It's my act. It's what I was told to do.
Yeah.
But then I had the whole crew just being so angry at me for working this character.
It's not like you're saying that backstage.
No. You know, but that was just...
But I guess there is a way to say things out there, which I'm sure if you look back on yourself now, 99, 2000 era Jericho... You probably shouldn't have said it that way. Or you buried this guy by doing this.
Right.
But it's funny because I say this. I go back to one of the biggest stars we've ever had is The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, he broke every rule. Like,
the
rule, you know, you don't want to bury your opponent. You want to kind of put them over so that way when you beat them or you lose to them, you've lost to someone important. He wouldn't. He'd make them out. He'd go out. He'd expose their weaknesses.
Yeah.
And make fun of them. Yes.
Still this day, comes back and just buries everyone and leaves.
Yeah. But buries them in the ways that they're actually bad.
Yeah.
Like, not in the ways their storyline bad.
Right.
You know, like, you can't
can't talk.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But he'll say it in a really clever and charming way. And everyone's like, ah, he's right. That idiot can't talk. Boo. Yeah, Rocky. Yeah. Rocky.
See you later. See you in 6 months, Rocky.
Yeah, you know.
But I mean, that's you.
But it worked for him. So.
Well, it did. And that's what you have to do. Like you said, you're finding out who you are, what your character is, and how to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, man, this is a whole different world
whole
here.
Different
coming
world.
Into the WWE.
Oh, yeah.
It's not much of a political game, but it's so easy to get heat or rub someone the wrong way or whatever it may be. But that's part of the growing process.
Yeah, I've stopped caring as much about heat, and it doesn't matter. It's kind of made up anyway.
Yeah.
And it comes and it goes.
And
as long as you're not a bad person and you're not going out to stab people in the back, I think it all comes out in the wash.
And that part is
that's
gone
what
from
I think.
The business right this
Thank
part
God.
Of time.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, but we're talking about your meticulousness, and there's a story I want you to tell about the In-N-Out Burger, because I've always wanted the same thing. It's just, you went to the In-N-Out Burger. And what happened there?
Okay, so this is what, before the start of the tour, it was a week ago, LA, San Diego.
Yeah,
so San Diego before the nightmare travel started on this tour. We go to In-N-Out. I'm with Big Cass and Enzo. And
I love those guys, by the
great
way.
Great guys, yes, absolutely. Traveling partners of mine since I first got to developmental. And I don't know, Cass orders this big order. He wants no cheese or something. I don't know. He gets this order. All cheese. So I'm saying, oh, I'm driving, right? I go, oh, no, I'm so sorry. My friend ordered no cheese. So this is my mistake. I'm holding the box half out the window and within her arm's reach. So she grabs the box. She goes, oh, okay, we'll make a new order. But now I kind of don't want to let go of the box. I go, well, wait, hang on. You're not going to throw that out, are you? Because I hate to see food go to waste.
Yeah.
I've become a real, especially like Daniel Bryan helped open my eyes up a lot to the consumption problems in this world.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, well, you can't hang on a second. You can't throw that out.
You played tug of war with it.
Yeah, well, I didn't, but I did. Okay. I could have gone, I kind of let it go, but the second it was out of my fingertips, I regretted it. And I was like, wait, don't, you're not going to throw that out, are you? And she goes, here's another thing we'll get to in a minute. Customer service people in America lie to your face like you're an idiot. And it's annoying, okay? She goes, no, we're not going to throw them out. I go, well, where are you taking them? She says, oh, we're going to do something with them, but we're not going to throw them out. What the hell else can you do with them? You can't serve them to someone else.
Yeah, right.
You can't do that.
You can put it up.
What are you going to do? Why are you lying to my face?
Put on the counter with a sign that says free burger.
We're going to do something with them. Just the biggest load of BS, right?
Right.
So now I'm so puzzled. She says, pull your car around. It's going to be a few minutes because In-N-Out's top quality. It's,
sure, they're
made
to
order.
Fresh, yeah.
Yeah. So pull your car around. We'll come to you, you know? So I'm sitting in the car and we're discussing things. But part of me is really stewing, thinking, what does she mean? We're going to do something with them. And it's really starting to eat at me. What does that mean? They're not going to throw them out, but we're going to do something with them? And I can't take it anymore. So I get out of the car, and I guess I actually, without knowing it, had passed the girl. She was delivering the new cars,
the new food
to the car, and I was at the desk or the counter.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, what happened to the burgers and this and that? And now Cass and Enzo have already gotten the new burgers. And they're looking at me in the car, and they can't see me, but you know, and your listeners can't see this now, but my arms are moving everywhere.
They can't hear you, but they can see you.
I'm very animated when I talk, so they're just looking over. They have all their fresh burgers here, and they're looking over through the window, and they just see me gesturing and going crazy with my arms. Where are the burgers? What do you mean? You're telling me you didn't throw them out? Can I see them? Can I see them? What do you mean? Tell me what you did with them. Anyways, long story short, they just threw them out. So why'd you lie to me? I knew you. If you just told me from the beginning, I'm sorry, sir, it's our policy. We have to throw them out.
Right.
I'd say, well, that's tragic, but it's okay.
Why don't they just at least give them to you then?
Let me have them. I would have eaten them or given them to someone else or something. Don't throw it out. God.
I love the George Costanza of this. It's like, what happened to the burgers? You got the burgers? You got the burgers.
So that actually
that's you, though, man.
Yes. So here's what I realize when it goes back to that. I think other people think I'm weirder than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I think I recently realized on this trip, I think I know why.
Okay.
I think it's because I grew up on Seinfeld. Okay, so I will make these. I will start these discussions that are kind of just about whatever. But I realize not everyone's like that.
Mm-hmm.
People don't just talk about these things. So, for example, we were on the bus on this trip. No one was really talking. I was looking out the window, and I saw what I thought was a graveyard. But then, as we kept driving, I realized, oh, that's not a graveyard. It's just a field, and those weren't crosses. They were whatever plants. Then I thought, where are all the graveyards? This is England. How many people have lived in England, in London, in history? Where are all the graveyards?
Oldest city in the world.
Where are all the dead people? Think of it. And then I started trying to do some math, and I thought, even Montreal. Montreal's a city of what, 3 million? I've lived in Montreal my whole life. I know two graveyards. How many people could there... People are dying all the time. Where are all these bodies going? So I open up the conversation to Greg Hamilton, who's sitting next to me. I go, hey, Greg, where are all the graveyards?
He's like, what?
I go, think about this, right? Think about this. And eventually, you know, so-and-so hears it. He jumps in. John Cohn, the referee, hears it. I don't know. Someone else hears it. And we're all talking about the graveyards. And then it turns into this big conversation about graveyards, where are all the bodies going? You would think with all these humans being born, all these humans dying, wouldn't we have just graveyards everywhere?
Yeah, yeah.
There's not. Where are they? Where are they going?
What's the answer that you came up with? Crematories?
So one thing, Sandow actually mentioned this. He said one of the things might be the rise of cremation due to the rise in atheism. You know, more people are probably getting cremated, which was a factor, but I think a minor factor. But all of this to say, it turned into this big conversation, and somebody's like, you're so weird with your who talks about this stuff? You know, it's like an episode of Seinfeld. And I realized people have been saying that my whole life to me, like, you know, when they hear me having these conversations, they're like, this is an episode of Seinfeld. I get that all the time. But it's not. It's just like, well, people don't talk about anything. They just talk about dumb stuff. You work and whatever. And it's like you talk about something that's not just the norm and you're instantly branded a weirdo. So that's, I think, what. And I blame Seinfeld. I think it's because I grew up on Seinfeld and having these Seinfeld-esque
seemingly
conversations.
Irrelevant questions that are very relevant.
Yeah, and you know what? This is how you learn. Because then, you know, I found out about the death rate. Because so that's another fun thing. We did a but this is how you learn.
Yeah.
This is how you learn, you know, by asking questions. So right. I was saying, okay, what's America got? 300 million people? How many people you think die in America? Nobody on the bus had ever thought about that question.
Hey, a day?
A year.
Okay.
Yeah. How many people a year die in America? I never thought about it. All of a sudden, your brain is working. Now you got to guesstimate. You have something to discuss.
Did you look it up?
So here's another pet peeve of mine. John Cohn Googled it. And another thing about the cell phones and the camera phones, I hate the instant gratification.
Oh, you want to do some research.
Well,
or some discussion.
I just don't want to know that quick.
Yeah.
You know?
Because
like,
I'm bad on Google.
You're saying, no, I think it's 2 million. Actually, here's the answer. Yeah. Well, okay, that's the end of that. It's, you know what I mean? Kind of a party pooper. But
what was the answer?
I think it was something like 2.5 million out of 300 million, right?
Okay, so 1% of the population basically is dying a year. Is that be 1%? 300 million?
Okay. 300 million of 2.5? Yeah, almost 30, a percent. 10%,
yeah.
Almost a percent.
Okay.
So that's a lot of people.
Yes.
So where are they all going? There should be bodies in the streets if you think about it.
It should be like Monty Python, piles of bodies carts.
You would think so.
I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, right? Where are they all going?
Yeah.
Anyways, so...
See, that's what
and there I am,
of.
And there's Sami Zayn right there, and that's the story of my life. You know, you have these conversations about just things, and all of a sudden you're the weirdo.
Just because you're asking, because you're curious,
because I'm the one asking. But you know what? All those people in that conversation secretly loved it. Loved it because come on, it's
great,
fun. It's
great
fun to talk about.
It's a great point.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed. Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You like to know the answers to things. You're also a big music fan.
Sure, yeah. We talk about rock and roll.
We talk about rock and roll. Yeah. Right now, the biggest rock star in the world is Axl Rose.
The biggest.
Besides singing for Guns N' Roses and singing for AC/DC. And you're a Guns N' Roses fan.
Sure
and
am.
You actually had an opportunity to meet Axl. And I never knew this except for Wyndham, Bray Wyatt, before I even met you, was always talking about Rammy. Who the hell is Rammy? Oh, he's Sami Zayn. Why do you call him Rammy? That's his name. He would always talk about you. And while you were off this.
How about the fun fact you told me about the Rammy name, the word Rammy?
Calgary, Western Canada. My friend Ajax would say it all the time. Oh, how was your date last night? She got all rammy. She got like bitchy or crabby. Yeah. Rammy.
Yeah.
Or the dude got rammy and threw a punch at me. So I always think rammy. So now I'm like, don't get all rammy on me, which means stuff like this.
Now it means it's Sammy.
Yeah. Then you start talking about graveyard. I was like, don't get all rammy on me. Tell me to kick you in the stomach. Don't be all rammy. So they were talking about the Guns N' Roses story. I've never heard it officially from you, but I want to hear the Axl story, which is a great one.
Man, honestly, I don't know if I'm the one to tell the story. First of all, I forget it. I've told it so many times that I don't know what's real and what's not real.
Well, that's
anymore.
Even better.
And I honestly don't know how to tell it in an entertaining way just off the top of my head. If you ever have Cliff, you know Cliff Carlton?
Yeah, he loves Guns N' Roses.
He's told this story before. On Kevin actually did like a Kevin Steen show back in the day, and he had the story.
So you go to a Guns N' Roses, though, do you?
But,
best.
Man, I'll try. I get Cliff actually knows someone who knew Bumblefoot, who
was guitar player, yeah.
Right. I don't think he's with the band anymore. You got to make room for Slash.
Yeah.
So, Chicago, we end up going to not only see GNR, but we're backstage.
Wow.
So, which is cool, man.
Yeah.
That's cool for me.
Sure.
Big GNR fan, like backstage at Guns N' Roses. That's like, to me, that is rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Backstage, my God. Anyway, yeah. So. Axl's not there, but the band is kind of there. And you know, first this is me once again. I think I talked about this last time on your tendency to get a bit comfortable a bit quick.
Okay, did you hear me say that in the promo last week?
Yes,
SmackDown. Yes. So this guy gets too comfortable too quick.
It made me laugh because it was art imitating life a little bit. It's I've gotten a lot better at it, especially since I did the loops the first couple of years, and then I had the shoulder injury, and I realized, okay. When I come back, I have to be a bit different here. I can't just, hey,
yeah.
Hey, buddies, everybody's, we're all friends. And like, no, okay. I'm at work and whatever and, you know, whatever. Mm. I learned a life lesson. But, you know, I go, we're backstage and I'm very sheepish at first. And then, you know, all right, there's a cooler there. You grab a little Dr. Pepper, you know. So, and then there's a little veggie spread. Next thing you know, I'm chewing on a couple of carrots and I'm dipping them in the ranch and I'm just progressively getting more comfortable. And then by the end, I don't know how it happens, but Bumblefoot walks by and he goes, hey, you play guitar? And I go, no. And he just puts his guitar on me. He goes, yeah, do it whatever you want. So now all of a sudden I'm backstage with a foot on the table, like strumming Bumblefoot's guitar. And I'm thinking, this probably shouldn't be happening right now. So that's one thing. And then the way it works, I guess, is or worked back then. I don't know how GNR's lineup is now. But so 5 minutes before showtime, Axl shows up. Everybody gets out of backstage, just band meeting. 5 minutes, they go on stage. Mm-hmm. So we get to go, all right, Axl's here, guys. Everybody clear out. Go to your seats. Go do whatever you want. Show's going to start in a few minutes. So we watch a show from the side of the stage. And Cliff, as you said, is a huge GNR fan, you know. So we're really just having the time of our lives, dancing. Now, this is a story I can't confirm or deny. But I think that, I think this is what happened. I can't say for sure. But we're dancing, and progressively, I'm getting more and more into it. So the dancing is getting a little louder, you know. Bear in mind, I'm on the side of the stage, and it's starting to creep up slightly towards the stage now. So I think this is my theory.
You might have been actually on the stage, 1 foot on the stage, maybe.
I can't confirm this, but I think, out of the corner of his eye, Axl saw me. And you know Axl, how he runs off stage after every song and does a wardrobe change?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's getting oxygen or whatever crazy rock star stuff he does.
Yeah.
He disappears for a minute while there's a solo. As Axl disappears, the next thing I know, a guard comes up to me and he goes, hey, cool it with the dancing. So I don't think it's – listen, there's probably nothing to the story.
No,
I'm probably
no
making it up.
There, man.
I think Axl saw me out of the corner of his eye, and he said, hey, tell that kid to stop with the dancing.
Tell that redheaded guy to stop dancing.
So Cliff and I just called him the dance Nazi or whatever, and he disappeared. And you know, but I would not be silenced. I continued to dance. I just toned it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Then we get backstage after the show. Great show. Another fun little story I'll just tell you since we're already in it here. But we're on the side of the stage and Bumblefoot's playing. I think I said this to you yesterday, but I have another thing where I'm very naive to drug and alcohol consumption. So if it's going on, I don't even know it. And then I think I'm having a good time with a bunch of fun-loving people, and then I realize everyone's off their face. So Bumblefoot's getting more into the music, and I'm thinking, wow, Bumble's really feeling it. What I don't realize is he's been taking shots between every song. He's smashed now. And he is doing, I forget the song, but it's one of their... like a big grand solo.
Maybe probably November Rain or something. He used to do
something
Slash's
like
solo
that.
Night,
he's doing a big grand solo and he's feeling the music and he's got his head back like this. He's leaning back and he backs up to where, you know, Cliff and myself and Punk was there. A couple of us were there and he goes, "Hey man," he's in the middle of the solo and he goes, "Hey man, you want anything to drink?" I go, "What? You're in the middle of a solo, man." He's like, "You sure?" "Oh, no, we're okay." All right, and he just keeps playing. So if you're watching the concert, you saw him back up into some people and have a little conversation.
And that was it.
And the second he left, I said, "Shoot, I should have asked him for a Dr. Pepper."
You're like Forrest Gump.
I'm actually thirsty.
I drank 7 Dr. Peppers.
Yeah. Anyways, the show finishes. We go backstage. And Axel's not there, but the rest of the band is. Everyone's in pretty good spirits. And Cliff, being the diehard Axel fan he is kind of giving his friend, Diego, saying, "Hey, think there's any chance we're going to meet Axel?" And, you know, his friend goes to Bumblefoot, says, "Hey, Bumble, you think my fans really want to meet Axel? You think it could happen?" Bumble's, again, had a few drinks. Like, "Sure, come on." He just takes us to Axel's party. Now, I should mention this. Backstage at this point wasn't just us and the band. It was filled with some hangers-on and some radio contest winners and whatever else.
VIPs.
Yeah. VIP, a couple hot chicks, whatever else. So he says, "Come on, guys." He's leading the charge down the hallway to a different dressing room. I'm front of the line. Cliff's right behind me. And we get to the door, and he opens it, and it's this really... you know, what's the opposite of lavish here? Just pretty humble,
standard stock,
little, you know,
room. Yeah.
Room. Well, there's Axel on his couch and his bathrobe, and like maybe some roses on the table in a little vase. And
a vase.
What do you say?
I think it's vase.
Vase, vase.
English is like
vase sounds
language,
a little pretentious. Actually, now that you mention it, it's in a vase. And, you know, he's got his little rolly bag, just like you got right here in your hotel room.
Yeah,
like his bag.
The wheels.
Jeans and his undies and whatever. I'm like, man, he's really just a dude, huh?
He really wears underwear, too.
Like, he's just like us.
Yeah.
Traveling man.
I thought he just disappeared after the game.
So Bumble, first of all, as soon as we get there, all the guards stand up. But Bumblefoot's, "Yeah, hey, they're with me, whatever. Axel, I brought some friends." And all the guards are high attention. Mm-hmm. But Axel is in a pretty good mood. He goes, "Hey, no, it's cool. Let them in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so nice. Right away, I'm like, "Oh, this is interesting." So there's a little lineup of us, a couple of us. One is this comedian, Marty DeRosa, Chicago comedian. And he kind of goes first. Bumble goes, "These are my friends." So Bumble, you know, Marty is a normal human being. And he just goes, "Hey, man, big fan. Thank you very much," or whatever. Now, to this day, I don't know why I said it the way I said it, but I was just so pumped. So when I meet Axel, he sticks out his hand. I go, and I give him a big, like, big smack handshake.
Brother,
I go, "Hey, Axel, good to meet you, man. Big f***ing fan, man." Like, do you know, like, the Bach impression, the Sebastian Bach impression we do? I sounded just like that.
I'm a big fucking fan, dude.
Big fucking fan, man. Like this, like 90s California kid, you know? Big fan, man. And he's like, "All right, okay." I think I immediately annoyed him a little bit. Okay? So I go to walk away. I go to turn around to walk away, and I look behind me, and I realize it wasn't just us that Bumblefoot took into the room. All the hangers-on came following us down.
Mm-hmm.
So now I see there's 20, 30 people in the room all waiting to go to Axel. So I realize it's now or never. Okay, I'm not going to get another chance to talk to him for the rest of the night. He's either going to see all these people in his room and he's going to go, "Get everybody out of here." Or he's going to talk to some hot chicks and not be concerned.
Yeah,
with
you're
some,
done.
I'm done here.
Yeah, yeah. Some
I'm done.
Redheaded,
yeah.
Arabic, Montreal
so
guy.
I really wanted the elusive picture with Axel.
Oh.
Which was already, I should have known better, but I had to go for it. You have to realize it was a do or die situation. So I shake his hand. I go to turn around. I see all these people. I pause for a second. I exhale. And I turn right back around. I face him. The second I turn around, he also turns away angrily. Like, I go, "Hey, Axel." So I'm starting a new conversation. Instantly, he turns his head away really quickly like that. Like, "Oh, God, what does he want now?" And like, just say hello and leave.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I say hello and I turn back around. He's instantly annoyed. So I go, I don't want to bother you, but is there any chance that we can get a as I'm saying the word picture, it was like a nuclear bomb, slow motion. Everybody, all his security guards going, no, like, do not do that. He's in his bathrobe. He just played a 3-hour show. Leave him alone. You can't. Sanctum. And it's Axl Rose. You don't ask him for a picture. Duh. I couldn't help it. So as I'm asking him, hey, Axl, do you? And as soon as I, again, as I said, as soon as I started talking, he turned his head away like this. And he's kind of shaking his head angrily, listening to me, but not making eye contact. And as soon as I said, is there any way we can get a picture? He goes, yeah, not now. Really loud. And it silenced the whole room. And it, I don't think I've ever been so embarrassed. It was like the record screeching everything. Yep. And I go, shit, well, not. Not now. Yeah, I didn't mean now. And I just tucked my tail between my legs and like
the walk back, of shame,
backpedaled to the corner of the room, completely embarrassed. And Cliff was right behind me.
Oh my gosh!
Waiting for his lifelong chance to finally meet Axl. And he tells the story as I ruined his chance to meet Axl because basically, right after the not now, he was kind of perturbed. Cliff got a quick hello, dismissive handshake, and then
everybody
flooded him. We were in the corner. I just wanted to get out of there pretty quickly. One other funny little side note is all of a sudden, now the room is filling up with people. And I think, hey, any minute now, Axel's going to freak and just kick everyone out. Because I have this image of Axel being this temperamental rock.
Yeah, of course.
You never know what he's going to do. And I figure you see all these bums hanging on just trying to get a piece of him. He's going to set everybody out. But to his credit, he stood up. He goes, hey, we need some music. And then somebody got some music on it. They're playing like some 50s R&B, you know. And we're having
I love your Axl impression, by the way.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's and then, this part of the story is not going to be funny because you can't see it. But I'm talking to Cliff and he just goes, holy shit, look at Axl. And I turn my head and he's in the middle of the dance floor in his bathrobe doing like almost like the serpentine. Like doing his dance in the middle of, and all these hot chicks around him in a circle going, woo. So I'm thinking, oh God, what an evening. And then finally we're in the corner. I'm ready to leave. Axl walks right by us to go to his bathroom and Cliff just throws one last ditch effort to kind of get a little conversation going with him. He just goes, hello, sir. And Axl goes, and he just walks by him and he goes into the bathroom. We hear the shower turn on. We just hear like me, 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 mo, 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 mo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's doing his vocal cool downs.
Yeah.
And that's when we knew it was time to powder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was the story of,
that is hilarious.
And it's funny. Cause in the years gone by, Cliff will always like vox me or send me these texts about how since that night in Chicago, Axel's never been the same. And he has all these new security measures and, you know, whatever. It's made it, anyways.
Well, it's great. And he's probably thinking, too, he's like, that's the dancing guy. Get the dancing guy out of here.
Get that dancing kid out of my room.
But the last rock and roll story, which is great. So I'm friends with Snake Sabo from Skid Row. We've been talking back and forth for years. He's been debating, should we try and get Sebastian back in? And finally, he's like, Sebastian's just, he's nuts. He's crazy. And then we start talking. He's like, listen, he's been sending some really nice texts about us. And we're thinking about it. And I go, oh, that's cool. Like, when was he? So just like a couple days ago. So I go on Sebastian's text feed or tweet feed.
Yeah.
And it's like some guy asks like, hey, you should get back together or wish you would. And he's like, yeah, I just really love to talk to the guys. I've been a real jerk. And that's the text tweet that Snake was specifically talking about. And I look who asked him the question and it's I like Sami Zayn.
It's me.
It's you.
Yeah. So for some reason, he said something. He sent out a tweet, right? And the tweet was something like, oh, I wish I could patch things up with the guys from Skid Row, you know, for a reunion or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just replied to it and I said, man, I would love to see that. And then he replied not to me. He replied a tweet, a full tweet, like without – it wasn't directed just towards me. He tweeted, I'd love to do this. I feel very bad. I've said a lot of mean things. I wish you would hear me out, blah, blah, blah. And then at the very end of the tweet, he tagged me.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was so funny that like I was getting all these tweets and I thought to myself, holy shit, am I about to get Skid Row to reunite?
Because that's the specific tweet that Snake mentioned.
Yeah.
You could be the man who saves Skid Row, who puts Skid Row back together.
I would take a lot of pride in that. I would love that to happen.
But for the extra double whammies, that Snake, I don't know if you know this, is a huge wrestling fan.
You told me that.
And a huge NXT fan. And I said, Snake, do you know who the guy is that sent that tweet that Sebastian answered that you loved? He goes, who? I said, it's Sami Zayn. He's like, you got to be kidding me. Sami Zayn might reunite Skid Row. No one else could do it. It might be you.
I hope to God that's true. What a legacy that would be. Not only in the wrestling business, but to somehow make a small dent on a rock band I grew up listening to.
That's right.
To, you know?
And you
like,
might have
cool.
pushed the ball in motion.
I hope it happens.
Together.
I hope it happens.
That was the start. That's a documented fact. Last question. One of the big matches at WrestleMania weekend, people are saying was the best match the whole weekend was Sami Zayn versus Nakamura.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How? I mean, obviously a great match. How did that come about for you?
Well, I thought I was doing a 2 out of 3. It feels weird to go back to wrestling after the actual
story.
I know,
but I have to ask about it.
Of course. No, it was a big match. To be honest with you, it was as far as how it came about, Hunter just told me, hey, listen, we got this big plan. We might do you and Nakamura. I said, cool. What I didn't realize at the time is, again, just because of the timing of it all, that I got called up right before in the build-up to it. So actually, it was going to be my last match.
Mm-hmm. In NXT.
For all intents and purposes. I might end up doing another match here, but it was the end of my run in NXT. Ooh, there you go.
Is that Axel? Thomas?
Yeah. Hey, I heard you're doing a podcast. You're imitating me. Yeah. Cut it out. Probably the wake-up call. Yeah, so it was pretty much the end of my run in NXT, and it was the start of his. And those NXT fans are real smart to these things, so they obviously were excited with good reason about Nakamura. So I think I met him literally once, and we've had very parallel careers. He started the same time as me. I think I started 2 months before him or something. 14 years, me 14 years. He was in New Japan. I never worked New Japan, so we never worked. We met maybe once. We never touched. And I remember Matt Bloom, who's the head of the PC now, was saying, hey, maybe you guys want to get in the PC and spar a little or something like that. I don't want the first time you guys get in the ring ever, first time you touch, to be at this big match. And unbeknownst to me, he said the same thing. I said, no, I prefer that, you know, which is a dangerous thing, but it's what I know.
It can be magical too, though.
It can be. Yes, it would. I prefer for the first time to be in the show instead of, hey, let's feel it out in the ring, feel how this guy moves and stuff. So we ended up putting something together, and I actually think it was one of my best matches maybe ever, like top five or something. I thought it was really, really
because
good.
Because of the combination of the crowd response.
Just a million variables. I think it was really sophisticated in some ways with certain things that most fans won't pick up on, but you know, when it comes to trying to protect a character or build a new character or make someone look good, some of the nuances that only, you know, workers or, you know, veteran guys or producers or whoever, people that know to look for these things would spot. And then on top of that, the crowd was just molten. So it was our match to lose, you know. It was a great match right here on the table. Ruin it. Go ahead and ruin it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think we did. I think it was really good. And I think it was great because of the emotion, you know, and that's the thing for me. I mean, WrestleMania and WrestleMania weekend, there's so many shows in town, like other indie shows and stuff. And I think what sets it apart or from other good matches I had or other good match I had on the indies is really the emotion in the crowd. And if you actually watch it back and really break the match down, we didn't do that much, but it seems like we did a lot. And to me, that's part of the
art form. That's the secret we're talking about.
That's the secret. We had this big grand match, epic war, but actually nothing got thrown out. Nothing meant everything we did meant something. You know what I mean? It was just for me
personally.
I'm here just rambling about how great my work was, but really I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for all these reasons because it was to me a home run on all these levels that I try to strive for.
Do you think Nakamura can make it in the big stage in
the
big leagues?
Undoubtedly. He's great, and he's got this thing that I feel like it's changing now, but for Japanese guys in years gone by, even when you go back to WCW, when Japanese guys came in, they were kind of just faceless Japanese, like
generic
Japanese
music
shoot fighter guys like
stone faced.
Someone like Otani, who's awesome, came to WCW and he was just
a guy.
Yuji Nagata came and he was just a guy.
Lots of these guys are great
wrestlers, but Nakamura has got this thing that's transcended. He understands the character aspect. Like, you watch his entrance, and that was another time I just started cursing at the top of my lungs in the middle of the ring. I got so fired up at one point that I was just like, come on, let's do it. He understands that character aspect, and then he's got the work to back it up. So he's this sort of hybrid that I think not only in Japan, but here in WWE and in general in the wrestling world, this is where we're at right now. You can't just be one thing. You can't just be a character. You can't just be a good wrestler, but faceless and generic Japanese guy. Being Japanese isn't a gimmick.
It's not enough.
It's not a gimmick. It's not enough. It's not a character. So you got to hit on all cylinders. And not to go into a whole rant here with you, but I think maybe you'd appreciate this. But the way I've always viewed wrestling is I've modeled my career and my matches and my work and everything. I try to model it after the movie Terminator 2. So Terminator 2 was this transcendent action movie, right? But you go back and watch it now, it stands the test of time, which A, is the first
mark. It does.
It's the first mark of great art, which is something Finn Balor told me. I said, you know what? What really makes a great match? The crowd? Sometimes the crowd's wrong. Sometimes they cheer like crazy for a match that's not that good. More often than not, they're right. That is the general barometer we use. But you know what? You can trick them. So is that the great? And he said, no, you know, stands a test of time. That's what makes it good. Like, you watch a match that had all these pops, doesn't necessarily mean it was great, but you watch a match back like Sean Brett WrestleMania, it's not a pop filled match, but it stands the test of time. It gets better with age. So Terminator 2 stands the test of time right off the bat. But furthermore than that, it's got three major elements that I try to have in all my matches. So, which is A, great characters, B, great story, and C is great action and great visual effects, because that's all the great moves and the tornado DDT through the floor, and those are special effects. You know, and there's something to be said about special effects, because again, it transcended action movies at that time for the special effects, sort of like the Matrix did years later.
You always remember the T-1000 blowing up and then coming back together again.
So for me, it's not just one of those three elements. You can have just good story, or you could have good characters, but the story sucks, there's no real action, it's kind of flat. Or you got, you know, you got to hit those three. Those are my three points that I try to hit. Good characters, good storytelling, good action. To me, that's what I, as a fan, want to watch. And that, for that reason, is the art that I want to kind of put out. I don't know. It's just great. Food for thought. That's just how I view it.
It's a great way to analyze it. Last question. Favorite Guns N' Roses song?
Oh, man. I remember I played Locomotive once on the bus by accident. I was trying to play You Ain't the First, and I put on Locomotive, and you looked at me right away.
Don't change that song.
Dude, how did you know? This is my favorite GNR song.
It's the best GNR song.
I don't know. I think it's almost like the Beatles, where your favorite song changes with time.
Depending on the day.
I think I told you this, but recently the one that I've been listening to a lot is You Ain't the First.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice.
Shannon Hoon.
Yeah.
But probably, man, I just heard, I think you were playing it actually. Maybe it was Civil War. You were playing it in the locker room or something the other day. Because it's more relevant now than maybe ever. Yeah. You know, it's war is war. It's what you said, like, war is war. That's a song that'll, again, stand the test of time. You know, so, and his vocals in that song are incredible. It's just it's a masterpiece.
Are you going to go check him out this summer?
Yeah, I'm going to try to see him in Orlando, but I think with our schedules, it might not work. I saw that we're actually doing a Raw and SmackDown in Ohio, and they're playing Cincinnati the Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
So I might try to go to that one.
That might be good, yeah.
If you're around, let me know.
Maybe I'll do it. Just no dancing on stage.
I think Axel learned his lesson. I don't think I'm getting anywhere near the side of the stage. He probably doesn't know I exist, in all honesty.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks for having me.
All right. It's going to be Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens at WWE Payback, the pay-per-view, Sunday, May 1st. You can see that on the WWE Network. So thanks to Sami for coming back to Talk as Jericho. Tweet him at I Like Sami Zayn if you have a theory about graveyards and where all the bodies might be. I want to know. Or if you have a suggestion on what to do with the uneaten burgers at In-N-Out Burgers. And also, like I said, if Skid Row does reunite with Sebastian Bach, you know where it started. You can thank Sami Zayn. What a hilarious guy. One of my favorite guys on the roster right now. So thanks to Sami, and thanks to you guys for supporting all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors on this show, including the one who's been with the podcast since the very first episode, the OG sponsor, Amazon. Please use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links whenever you do any online shopping. Easiest way to support the show. Remember, all those Amazon links, you can also bookmark them at podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button, okay? I got Amazon links for the USA, UK, in Canada. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percent to the show, so help us cover the production costs. You can buy anything you want on Amazon. Be a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. When you buy something on Amazon, take a screenshot of it, post it at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, and I will retweet it, and I will follow you as well. That's what I want you to do. Remember, go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button, and do that now. And also go check out my other sponsors. Don't forget ddpyoga.com/Jericho and the DDP Yoga app. Buy the workout at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. Go to Harry's, use my promo code Jericho. Get $5 off your first order of these quality razors for that smooth jazz shave. Go to True Car, Geico, Guitar Center. All of these people are great people, and they will give you the best products at the lowest price. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button on iTunes if you haven't already. That way you won't miss any of the crazy rock and roll stories from the guests on this show. Go ahead, hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating and a comment. I do read the comments, and your ratings and reviews are what's going to help get this podcast to number one on the iTunes charts, which means a lot. So go help out Talk is Jericho. Help us get to number one. Tell your friends about us. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And I thank you, Friday. I got a very different type of show talking about the sex trafficking industry. Annie Lobert started a organization called Hookers for Jesus. She's a reformed prostitute, Las Vegas prostitute, the rock star of Las Vegas prostitutes, who got out of the business and formed a ministry called Hookers for Jesus. And what a story she has. It's riveting. And you are going to be very interested in what Annie has to say. So Hookers for Jesus here on Friday. We'll see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.